Hey everyone, and welcome to this, the first Snake Oilers edition for 2018. I'm Patrick Gray. As most of you would know, this is not the regular weekly show. This is a special edition we publish four times a year, in two parts each, so really eight times a year. And as you may have guessed from the title, this is the Risky Business Podcast where vendors pay for time to pitch their products to you, the listeners. There are only 20 slots available every calendar year for vendors to pitch, and we're currently sold out until the August edition of Snake Oilers slots, and we only have four slots left for the whole year. So if you're a vendor and you want to do one of these, email my right-hand man, the Risky Business Commercial Manager, Tiran Ferrier, on sales@risky.biz. And we've actually got some great pitches for you today. We'll be hearing from Rapid7 first. They've developed a new addition to their Insight platform called Insight Fish. There are already so many fishing simulation tools out there, so shortly we'll hear from Justin Buchanan from Rapid7 on why Rapid7 has gone down this path. And he actually makes a pretty compelling argument as to why they've bothered. Simulation is just one part of Insight Fish, the other part is response, and they've kind of closed the loop on that. So if you're already a Rapid7 customer, you'll probably be very interested in Insight Fish, and even if you're not, it might get you looking at their stuff. Then we're going to hear from the team at VMray. VMray makes a cloud-based binary analyzer for all you DFIR types. They're a German company founded on the back of the founder's PhD, and they actually raised millions of dollars in funding in 2016 from German investors. And I know personally, I want to hear from any company that convinced Germans to invest large sums of money. They have released a new version of their product that they'll be telling us a bit about, and that's coming up soon. And finally, in this edition, we're going to hear from Mimecast. And you know what? Mail filtering is a hard thing to pitch because most of the functionality is completely opaque to the user. So the Mimecast team will be along in our final pitch of the day to explain to all of you what you should be asking of your email filtering provider before you sign on the dotted line. It's actually really good generic advice, surprisingly neutral advice too. So do stick around for that. But yes, first up, we are speaking to Rapid7 Solutions Manager for Offensive Security Products, Justin Buchanan. Rapid7 is our biggest sponsor, our key sponsor of Snake Oilers this year, and the reason behind that is actually pretty simple. They make a lot more product than people actually realize. Everyone knows about Nexpos and the Metasploit-based stuff, but fewer people know about their Insight platform, detection and response, and all sorts of stuff. So the idea is you're going to hear from Rapid7 four times this year in Snake Oilers, and they'll be talking about some of their lesser-known products. But today they're talking about something completely new. It's actually just in beta right now, and it's called Insight Fish. And yes, it is a fishing simulation tool, much like Fish 5 or Fish Me or any of the other countless offerings. But what makes this different is they've actually closed the loop on simulation and reporting and integrated the whole thing into their Insight platform. They've even got like report phishing buttons that integrate with a bunch of different mail clients. It's pretty cool stuff. The Rapid7 Insight platform is something you should probably know about if you're a CISO, to be honest. They used to have a product called User Insight back in the day, which you've probably heard me speak about on the show because it was UEBA that worked really well, and it was UEBA before UEBA was hip. And now everyone's doing it. So that gives you some idea about where they're at. Anyway, Insight Fish is just one more Insight tool. And Justin Buchanan joined me to explain why Rapid7 went down the fishing simulation road when so many others have done that before. Here's what he had to say.
We know that today in every organization, the number one threat is phishing. And we have a lot of different ways that we can help our customers combat phishing with solutions like Insight IDR, our next generation SIM. We can let you know as early in the attack chain as possible when you've been compromised. And our asset management tool, Insight VM, can let you know or if you're vulnerable to the particular malware that these people are using. But what we haven't been able to offer to our customers before today is a way to be proactive, to proactively defend against these phishing attacks. And specifically when we're talking about the large attack vector that is users. So to try and protect this massive attack vector, that's why we've created Insight Fish as part of our overall offering, as another tool in the overall security operations toolkit.
So as opposed to this being a point solution, this is more something perhaps, I guess, initially targeted at existing customers that they could just then plug into their, you know, to their Rapid7 suite.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. One of the things that we've seen that's been pretty interesting is Insight Fish right now is a beta product. So it's not currently for sale today, but we're using it to try and get the word out and help solve this problem. And a vast majority of the people that we've seen coming in to try out Insight Fish have actually never been Rapid7 customers before, which is pretty cool, but somewhat surprising. So we think that the point of Insight Fish is that, yes, it can help existing customers today take a proactive stance on phishing by training their users, but also it's helping introduce people to Rapid7 for the first time. And then we can, as we mature together, bring in other products to more mature their security program with other offerings.
So I'm guessing this is the typical sort of phishing suite where you load it up and, you know, you pick a template and you sort of fire it off to users and then you wait to see which users report it. Is that kind of the idea? And that gets them in the habit of reporting phishing emails. So when a genuine one comes in, the hope is that they'll report that one as well. Is that the idea?
Yeah, that is exactly the idea. Insight Fish is phishing identification, analysis, and simulation. So what you just talked about is the simulation component, which is very much as you said, Patrick, you need to think like an attacker and take the same steps that attackers would take when they're targeting your organization and use templates and those tactics in order to train your employees to know what to look for. So exactly as you said, when they will identify it via the simulations and not fall for the real thing. The way that we can measure success over time is by tracking people that interact with our phishing simulations versus people that report them. So in a perfect world, what we should see is over time, interactions with these simulations go down and reporting goes up.
Yeah.
And that leads us into the other major aspect of Insight Fish, which is the reporting and analysis capabilities.
Yeah, walk us through that, because like it's one thing just to do that simulation side, but there are other services who do it, right? So I'd imagine that if you've got this opportunity to do something a little bit cooler because you've already, you know, you're already fulfilling other functions within a company, then you're going to have options to do more. So what is the extra piece that you get by using Rapid7's take on this versus someone else's?
Right. So that's very much the thing. Insight Fish does do the simulation side of this process very well. It's very straightforward. It's very easy to use. But it is a somewhat common service that is offered out there. Of course, we think ours is better than some of the other offerings. But in general, the real differentiator for us beyond just being part of the overall Rapid7 portfolio is this reporting and analysis piece. So what Insight Fish is going to offer is one-click reporting right within the email clients. So if you're using G Suite or Gmail or Office 365 or Outlook, we're going to be able to add an extension to your user's email clients. And it's a nice little button right there that when they're looking at an email, if they think it may be suspicious or it may be phishing, they can click that button and it'll suck it right up and send it off to Insight Fish so that your analyst can then come in and analyze
it. See, that's the part that I think, and to a degree, I think that's been the missing piece with a lot of these things, right? Is that, it's great to train your users to identify phishing messages, but unless you can sort of integrate that into the reporting, like it doesn't get you necessarily that far, right? So I guess really this idea is to just get people hitting that button.
Yes, agreed. And one of the things that we've seen that's been pretty interesting is if we take the internal program here at Rapid7, before our security team started using Insight Fish, we had a similar process where our users could report messages to our security team for analysis. And at that time, they were doing that analysis manually. So our internal team reported an average time of about 18 minutes per email because they're going to go and they're going to check the return path. They're going to check the links, they're going to check the attachments, they're going to go through all these steps to determine if this reported message is or is not, in fact, phishing. What we've done in Insight Fish is provided this analysis system where we take these messages that are reported and we go through and run through these common indicators of phishing for you. We automatically check the links, we automatically check the return path, we scan the attachment to determine if it's malicious or not. So now what our internal team has seen is that they've gone from about 18 minutes per email down to about 5. So before the introduction of analysis, there was actually this strange kind of feeling where the analyst was thinking, you know, I really do want people to click the report button more often because that'll help me stop these attacks.
Yeah, but I don't want to DOS my ability to do my job, right? Because I'm spending all my time looking at shady emails.
Exactly.
Yeah. So which clients are you actually adding support for this to? You mentioned that, you know, you're adding the Rapid7 red button to a whole bunch of email clients. What are they?
Right. So today we offer one-click reporting support for Gmail, often referred to as G Suite in the professional setting, Outlook, and Office 365.
So the G Suite thing, is that like a browser extension or something, or how does that work?
It is. It's a Chrome extension.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're using, you know, IE or?
Sure. So in the event that you're not using one of the three that we support, be it the Chrome extension, the Outlook extension, or the Office 365 extension, then in that case, you can use other reporting methods that may not be one click, but that are more in line with some of the other reporting mechanisms that we see out there today.
So you'd go to a boring old forward.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. The forward button. It's okay. You can say it. It's not another reporting method. It's the forward button.
Sure. It is the ideal reporting method when your users are on mobile, though. So there's still, we still make sure to support that use case because it is still very valuable.
What's the feedback been from customers so far?
It's been very good. It's been resoundingly good. What we have seen is we have gathered some really interesting feedback on what we need to do to go to the next step. Because as I mentioned, InsightFish today is a beta product. So we came out with a product that fully satisfied our primary use cases, which was enabling our users to simulate phishing campaigns to improve their employee resilience to phishing, and enabling our customers to have their employees report suspected messages so that they can then analyze them. And that's what it does today, and that's what it does really well. But it is a beta product, and there's so much more that we can add to make it even more robust. And the thing that's exciting about InsightFish right now is because it is in this unique phase of its life, people that join the beta today have an active role, actively participate in the future of this product.
Yeah, so you can, if you join up now, you can help to shape it, sort of thing. So, I mean, Rapid7 started as a small company. I mean, it's been listed for some years now. It's a $2+ billion publicly listed company that actually makes a lot more products than you'd probably realize. Justin Buchanan, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for joining us to walk us through InsightFish. And, you know, I got to say, I mean, what you're doing, it actually sounds like the next step in phishing simulation stuff. And just to actually close the loop on the, you know, it's one thing to put phishing emails in front of other people. It's another thing to close the loop with some effective reporting. We wish you the best of luck with it. And thanks a lot for joining us on Snake Oilers.
Thank you, Patrick. Very much appreciated.
That was Justin Buchanan of Rapid7 there. Big thanks to him for that. And I've linked through to Rapid7's InsightFish page in the show notes for this podcast. Maybe you can get in touch and be part of the beta program. Okay, next up, we're going to talk to VMray. VMray makes an online binary analyzer. You take a sample, you upload it, VMray blows it up in its VM, which they say is very good at avoiding being detected by the malware that you're blowing up in their VM. And then it'll spit out a bunch of tuned analysis for you. Unlike VirusTotal Intelligence, or VirusTotal generally, which is a great tool, don't get me wrong, but unlike VT, it won't actually share file hashes of stuff you submit. So you don't have to worry about alerting attackers to the fact that you're analyzing their malware, which can be an issue for some organizations, particularly in high security environments. VMray was founded on the back of the founder's PhD, and their office is actually over the road from a German university. And they have a lot of to and fro back from the uni. They have 45 staff now. And I have to say that when I first announced I was going to be doing some, you know, marketing, because that's what this is. When I first announced that I was going to be doing some marketing for VMray, I was on the receiving end of a bunch of tweets saying how great their stuff is. Now, I have no idea myself because I don't work in DFIR, but I guess what I'm saying is that they're a popular bunch of people. So that's always a nice thing. It's always an encouraging sign. Anyway, we did a sponsor interview last year with a VMray customer in one of the weekly shows. But since then, they've done a major update. They're up to version 2.2 of their platform, which has included huge changes to the UI. VMray's sales and marketing chief, Chad Loven, joined me to talk about VMray and its new version. And don't worry about the sales guy title, by the way, because Chad speaks human. And here's what he had to say.
First of all, you know, the name is derived from the idea of, you know, a virtual machine and an X-ray. So we're about, you know, giving that X-ray you know, that deep inspection and analysis of what's going on inside, you know, a virtual target machine. You know, how that translates into a product is we're effectively a sort of a malware analysis or network sandbox. And we've built around that core technology a slew of additional tools and interfaces to really facilitate the work of, you know, a DFIR, digital forensics and incident response specialist. Or, you know, alternately, in very high volume applications, we have a lot of technology companies that license our technology to embed our dynamic analysis as part of their overall security suite. You know, some of which are public, like SonicWall, for example, leverages VMware as part of their Capture ETP service for their firewall customers.
That's interesting. I didn't actually realize you were doing things at volume. I figured most of it was going to be people doing detailed analysis of, you know, funny binaries that they've come across.
Yeah, well, you know, we tend to talk, of course, more towards our own end users, but there's definitely, you know, quite a sizable business for us, you know, in terms of, you know, other people leveraging that technology. Some we can talk about, some we can't, but it's, you know, it's all basically where, you know, they plug in VMware to fill that, you know, gap in analysis or visibility in their own product line.
Yeah, so why don't we talk about the use case for an end user? Because I'm, you know, the licensed use at volume is kind of an extension of that, really. I think it's much more interesting to talk about what it looks like when a human being is submitting something to VMware. What does that look like? What does that process look like? And why would you need VMware?
Yeah, well, we've put a lot of work in, especially with the 2.2 release, to make it a lot more user-friendly. You know, we come from a very strong academic background. The two co-founders both built VMware based on their PhD work in dynamic binary analysis and have an extensive academic history in that field. And so certainly going from, you know, an academic proof or technology to a commercial product is, you know, it's not a straightforward path. And one of the things that we've you know, spent a lot of time and effort on in the last couple of years is really making it more accessible and friendly so that you don't have to be you know, a PhD or, you know, an experienced incident responder to use VMware. So we have customers, you know, they've got their entire cert team, you know, around the world. Logging into VMware, submitting samples that they find or they get fit in from different sources, analyzing, and then, you know, escalating to where you know they most need to act on it. Some of that's manual, just going in through the web interface, and, you know, some of that, of course, is automated through the connectors. You know, there's a lot of talk in the industry now about, you know, SecOps, you know, especially, you know, with you know, Splunk buying Phantom. So we've also put a lot of effort in the last couple of years in building out those connectors to those SecOps automations tools, and really trying to make it a seamless as possible process, whether you're coming in as a tier one analyst and submitting, or whether it's all just through the API and the connector.
Now, one thing I find interesting about this is, you know, there's a clear difference between submitting something to VMware or versus submitting something to VirusTotal, which is that you don't share any of the information based on submitted samples. So you know, if you're dealing with an attacker that might be waiting for file hashes for its tools to pop up in VirusTotal, you know, this is definitely a better option. That is a small set of people who are going to be worried about that particular problem, but there's not too many other online tools that'll do that for you.
Certainly, you know, there's a core subset of customers who are extremely concerned about that. But certainly, it comes up a lot more often these days. For those of you that are familiar with that, you know, GDPR, and I think everyone these days is being affected by those regulations in Europe. You know, everyone's a lot more conscious now of the risks of data sharing, and even outside of GDPR, you know, there's certainly been plenty of examples where, you know, confidential company documents get uploaded to VirusTotal, and before you know it, there it is. That spreadsheet is there for the whole world to see. So I we've definitely sensed a lot more visibility.
That's really interesting that you highlight GDPR as a driver, because it is one of those things where that's kind of almost an unintended consequence of a law like that, right?
Yeah.
Very good for you, but you know, I wouldn't have thought of that as a driver, but it makes total sense.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and we're seeing that everyone is affected, basically, because unless you absolutely never do business with anyone in Europe, which is really the case in our industry, it's a global industry, we're all affected by it. And I think that gives us a bit of a leg up, you know, with our history, you know, being built around, you know, European privacy regulations and German, especially privacy regulations, which have always been very, very strict. You know, we've understood from day one, you know, the importance of, you know, keeping your information to you and minimizing you know, that spillover or exchange where, you know, it isn't necessarily needed, and it's, you know, you can still get the results you need and the response you need without, you know, sending that spreadsheet out to the entire world.
Now, last year, as part of VMware's marketing, you actually booked a weekly episode of Risky Business. And instead of getting one of your own staff onto the show, you had one of your users come on to just sort of walk people through the workflow and what you use it for. And, you know, it was Koen van Impe who gave us a really nice rundown of how you'd actually use VMware, you know, submit a sample, what sort of output you get back, you know, how verbose is it, how well tuned is it on the flip side of that, et cetera, et cetera. But you've been working really hard and just done this major new release, which you mentioned earlier, version 2.2. Can you tell us exactly what's new? Like, what have you changed?
Yeah, well, the most important change was really around the usability. You know, we've always had from the very beginning, and I should add, by the way, this is the second go with myself and the two co-founders at a commercial malware analysis product. You know, we did the first one 10 years ago. We sold that one. And so really, you know, the whole genesis of VMware was, you know, to overcome some of the limitations and the obstacles that first generation of technology. And we definitely succeeded with the core technology. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we had a lot of work to do to make it more accessible, you know, especially for more junior analysts. And so that's really what we've done with 2.2 is, you know, allow, you know, a more broader range of more junior analysts who aren't necessarily people with 5 years of reverse engineering experience to know how to get a meaningful result out and get some actionable information out. So a lot of effort on the usability of it, a lot of enhancements around, you know, we incorporate threat intel, so we're ingesting a lot of information. You mentioned VirusTotal, of course. We make that an optional integration, but we certainly have no problem if customers want to incorporate VirusTotal or OpsWAT MetaDefender results, because that's all complementary to the dynamic analysis, of course, you know, where, you know, we're going to show you what that thing would have done if it executed on your desktop, and then we're layering around it all the metadata, if you like, about what else you need to know about, you know, where was that URL first seen that it tried to communicate with, what is the reputation of that URL, what's the whois info, all that kind of stuff is wrapped around to really make it a one-stop shop, if you like, on, you know, from every aspect of, you know, what is this thing and what did it do, and
so it really comes down to the UI enhancements, and you know, a big thing is, you know, integration, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, you know, we certainly see both more demand for, you know, quality threat intel. And, you know, as you know, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, let's call it snake oil, you know, where there's a lot of threat data out there masquerading as threat intel. So we've definitely put a lot of effort into making sure that we're incorporating meaningful information related to what you're trying to analyze and then presenting that in a very actionable way. So it's very easy for you to see, all right, this thing did that, then it did that. And I need to worry about this if I see that somewhere else on one of my other endpoints. And that's really the guiding philosophy of this release.
You did mention, though, that you're licensing this technology now to vendors. One of them you named was SonicWall. Are they using it just to do to do file scoring? Or is this something that's being used by their people to do manual analysis? Or is this all automated high volume stuff? How are they using it? Because there's a lot of vendors who are listening to this. And I'm guessing some of them might be interested in what you got to offer.
Yeah, no. SonicWall is absolutely an entirely automated case. You know, The difference is that in the automated case, I mean, you're extracting the IOCs, you're absolutely scoring the file, but we're going to be scoring it in a much more verbose way that gives you a much more accurate set of representations of, you know, what did this thing really do? You know, one of the things we put a lot of effort in really from the beginning and really the underlying concept of VMware is how do we make this thing invisible to malware? How do we convince malware that it is actually executing on its intended target machine? So please show us the behavior that you would show if you were wreaking havoc on the customer's desktops or servers. And that's really one of the key value propositions that we have is that you know, we really do not present any attack surface in the target machine for the malware to hook onto and raise its hand and say, hey, you know, I got you. I know I'm being analyzed.
So how do you actually do that? How do you actually stay opaque? I mean, it's always going to be an arms race, right? But what's the secret sauce? Is there any one trick that you speak about publicly?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is really, you know, based on our previous experience, you know, where we had, you know, a sort of a cuckoo-like sandbox, you know, where we had a sort of a hook that we injected in the target machine. And, you know, we tried to hide that hook from the malware authors. And you really can't at the end of the day. As soon as you're modifying that target machine, you have an attack surface, they're going to find it. And, you know, they're going to say, you know what, I'm out of here. So with our technology, we don't modify the target machine at all. So you can basically drag over your gold images and those become your target machines. And so the beauty of that approach is, you know, the malware really, you know, cannot identify something, some artifact, and say, with, you know, say definitively, you know what, I know I'm being analyzed. So that's the beauty of the approach. You know, there's a lot more to it, of course, but that's the essence of it. That you know, we're able to replicate for the malware exactly, you know, what it wants to see. So I like to use the analogy of the Matrix, of course. You know, we built a better Matrix, and if the malware is Keanu Reeves, Keanu isn't going to see Agent Smith walking around there. There's no glitch in the Matrix with us.
All right. Well, Chad Lovin, thank you very much for joining us on Snake Oilers to walk us through VMware's stuff. And look, I wish you all the best with it.
All right. Thanks very much, Patrick.
That was Chad Lovin there of VMware, and you can get a 30-day free trial of VMware's gear. I've linked through to the URL in the show notes. And you know what? If you work in DFIR, why not just go and, you know, register, throw a sample you know at it, and see what the output looks like. If you do that, and if you do that, let me know how you went. I'm always interested in feedback about a sponsor's technology. So yeah, let me know. Okay, our next pitch this week is from Mimecast. Mimecast is one of the big players in email filtering, cloud-based email filtering. They are publicly listed, and they have something like 30,000 customers all over the world. And they're regarded as having a particular forte in doing mail filtering for Microsoft Office 365 customers. But here's the thing, mail filtering is mostly opaque to the user, so how do you actually select a provider? It's always going to come down to a handful of fairly similar companies, and once you've got things up and running, that's more or less that. I mean, it's not entirely that set and forget, but it's more or less that. Well, as you'll hear, Mimecast Australia's principal consultant, Garrett O'Hara, wants to emphasize the high local headcount here in Australia and in a few other regions, as opposed to just, you know, basing everyone in the USA, which some companies do. And he also wants to talk a bit about things they're doing on the back end that they feel make them more responsive than other providers. But first up, we thought we'd do something more information-based in this segment. Mark French, the company's chief trust officer, walks us through five questions he thinks you should ask of a mail filtering provider before you sign on the dotted line. Here he is.
Do they solve the problem I'm trying to overcome, and do they do it in an efficient manner? So regardless of whether you choose Mimecast or someone else, do you actually know the problem you're trying to overcome, and will the provider on the other side actually have the ability to overcome it? Is the first part of that question. Then second of all, can they do it in an efficient manner? And I like to stress this because a lot of times if you need to roll in an army of consultants and it's going to take you 45 man years to actually make it happen, I would say it may fix your problem, but it may fix your problem in 2020, not in 2018, and you're experiencing it today. So that's kind of question number one.
Okay, so onboarding is obviously point number one. Like, nail that down. What's point number two, Garrett?
A big one for us would be that asking around how quickly can the architecture adapt to new threats. That obviously plays out into how quickly things change in terms of attacks that are coming through. So, you know, it's a bad world out there, and people are literally spending their days trying to figure out new ways to breach organizations. And you know that email is the way in. It's the easiest way in. The folks in the end of an email address are not necessarily security aware or security trained. So, you know, why wouldn't you send a link that when they click on it, it's going to do the nasty thing? It's the idea that the platform is actually, so it's built on a single code base, but we're actually fairly dynamic in terms of the engines that we use. So, you know, that MSOC that sits here and globally, they're constantly looking at the performance of various engines, you know, whether it's basic AV, and then kind of swapping those out or adding new ones as required to kind of give the outcome for our customers. And I think that's a fairly unique approach. You know, we're not beholden to any particular engine. And essentially what our customers get is a defense in depth, but as a service.
All right, number three.
So I guess I would say, how easy is it to adapt to your changing environment? So what Gar highlighted was how easy is it to adapt to threats that we see, but your business is going to change around you. So how flexible is the system that we have to adapt to your changing business environment? Can you, you know, how easy is it to create rules in your environment? How easy is it to adapt that to what your business is going to change to in the future?
The penultimate question, number four.
Can the provider make sure and ensure that email is always going to flow? Because it's fine to have security in place, but what happens if something goes wrong? Are they going to be able to guarantee that that stays up? And I'd probably add two things to that, and that's that, yeah, you can keep the email flowing, but how quickly, like, is there any break in service, or is there something that end users have to do to continue? In our mind, it should be seamless, right? It should be one of those things that either happens automatically or with minimal input from the IT or admins. And for end users, it should be business as usual. They should be able to sit in Outlook and just continue sending and receiving emails. So that's probably a huge one as well.
Okay, and what is the last in our list of five questions people should be asking before they sign up with a mail filtering service?
So I would guess, how do I tell if I'm any good? Right, so we can talk through the surveys that people take, and I can give you an ISO 27001 certification and analyst reports and all the other marketing collateral that you could ever consume. The real question is how do I truly determine whether or not I'm any good at doing in servicing the requirement that you actually have? And from our perspective, I think the best way to do it is try it. So, you know, if you're going into an organization and you really just want to figure out and kick the tires, it should be pretty trivial for you to get onboarded, try our service, figure out if it's doing and satisfying the requirements that you have. If it takes 40 man hours and a whole staff to actually get you up and onboarded, it's going to go a long way towards making you feel that that's how the regular implementation is going to go. So from our perspective, it's truly easy for you to get onboarded into the Mimecast environment, get set up, get a trial running, get a review of the things and the protection measures we have in place. And I think that's a selling point for us because we can do that really, really quickly.
So I guess point number five is just try before you buy.
Try before you buy, sir.
Now, look, you know, as we've already established, like setting yourself up as being somehow different to other providers in what is seen as a commodity space is a little bit difficult. But one thing that you like to hit is that, you know, a lot of the US providers, they're very, you know, their headcount's very much concentrated in the United States. Mimecast, that is one area where you're genuinely different.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been a kind of a heavy investment in Australia. And I think you see the standard approach often is land a sales team, sell some stuff, and then as people on board, actually, it's going to outsource to either outsource service providers in, you know, India, the Philippines, or the US. Australia kind of took a different approach. And we built out the DCs in, it was July 2015. So that's what, 3 years ago. But also invested in the kind of technical side to support the platform, because that's hugely important. You know, as I said, coming back to the original point where you sort of think email is just this thing you set up and forget about, but actually most companies have specific requirements that they'll just need help getting set up. So having the service delivery team, having a local messaging security team, so the folks who literally sit there looking at the local campaigns in Australia and making changes to our scanner layers so that our customers don't have to. So it's sort of almost like a virtual MSOC for folks who come on board with us. So lean enterprises, small businesses, I guess one less thing to think about where, you know, having met so many of those teams, they're underwater all the time. So being able to take some of that headache away is kind of important, and also professional services. I think one of the big things that stands out to me, and I've worked for a bunch of companies where they talk about customer experience, and it's, you know, it's one of those things that gets spruiked a lot. Literally everything we do gets measured, and our customers get surveyed. We've got a CX team, 5 people in Australia alone, and their job is to literally go to our customers and say, hey, how's it going? You know, you've paid for this thing, but you haven't set it up. Can we help you get to the nirvana, get to the end sort of point where you don't have to worry about this stuff as much as you are right now?
Yeah, well, I understand your headcount in Australia is 80 people and your CISO is based here, but it's not just Australia where you've got a regional presence. I mean, we're talking other places like the UK and Singapore and places like that, right?
Yeah, correct. So we're out of right now the US, so Boston, Dallas, and I'm going to say San Fran, yeah, UK, Germany just opened, and DC, South Africa, a strong presence there as well. So like, it's a global company, but with heavy investments in Australia as well.
So Pat, one of the things that I wanted to highlight there, to kind of expand on what Garrett was saying, is we took a very strategic approach on going into geography, because as you know, local knowledge is important when we start talking about threats. So this is the one challenge I had at some of the organizations I used to work at that were very US-centric. So the threats that the US organizations see aren't necessarily what we see in other geographies. So we took the approach that while we could run everything out of our headquarters in the US, it made much more sense to staff our MSOC in region, because we have the ability now to get access to kind of that local campaign and build that and bake that right into the organization and into the systems. So I think sometimes if you have an organization that's very US-centric, you're only really seeing US campaigns, whereas with folks on the ground in Australia, folks on the ground in South Africa, folks on the ground in the UK, we get this broad ability to see kind of local knowledge, ground intelligence across the world. Beyond the kind of off-hours coverage or follow-the-sun coverage, it's great to have that kind of local presence so that folks can actually understand how things are operating in Australia, not just how people in the US think things are operating in Australia.
Well, Mark French, Garrett O'Hara, thank you very much for joining us on Snake Oilers to give your very best solid pitch for your mail filtering service, because, you know, it's kind of a tricky thing to sell when most people seem to think it's set and forget. So thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
That was Garrett O'Hara and Mark French of Mimecast there, and you can check them out at mimecast.com. They are certainly one of the big providers. And that is it for part one of our first Snake Oilers briefing for the year. I'll be back in the weekly show in a couple of days, but until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.